there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hello and welcome to the show. Today we are going to get into the OA again. Going to discuss episode 3, 4, and 5. As well as a Danish movie from 97 called Let's Get Lost, a movie that I actually wanted to watch because of our brief discussion about Den Eneste Ene, or The Only One, last episode.
It's very obscure and pop culture-ish this time again, and it kind of worked out fine last time.
It did. And hopefully this time as well. Just a disclaimer, this is an old Danish movie, but I have never watched it before. This is also my first time seeing this movie, but obviously I know most of the actors in it because it's their household names now, but they weren't back then.
I see.
So that's interesting. So anyway, I think we should just get going.
Yeah.
And I really want to ask you, if you're back to your Håkan.
I needed to reset. I'm back to my
reset your palate.
Reset time. You know, we've been sick here. It seems we always have some stories of everybody being sick. What is this?
I have no idea.
Anyway, it is the season, like, late winter, you know, with the flus and everything. But as a result, I have gone back to Hoegaarden, probably because I haven't been out of the house that much to go to the
comfort beer.
Yeah, beer. That too. And I will now open it.
It's open it. Yeah. You and your cans.
I wanted to have one last night, but I said no. I'll enjoy it tomorrow when we record. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea. I've also been waiting for my beer. Yeah, he's pouring it and
it's looking good.
Up the whole glass. Yeah. Getting ready for the big game tonight.
Yes. There's a big game on. We're recording a couple hours before Barcelona Man United. So.
Mm-hmm. So he's drinking.
Rune, and enjoying it. What do you have?
I'm always trying something a little bit different. Anyway, today Raskva picked this one for me. I showed her to the beer section in the supermarket and said pick one, and she got this one from Svaneke Brewery. It's an organic beer from Bornholm, which is a very a small island. Quite far away from the rest of Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a golden, happy, and generous beer, it says. And it's apparently a slow beer. And that's the kind of beer where you pour foam, and then it settles, and then you pour foam again, and it settles until you have a big glass of beer.
I see.
So I'm interested to see if there's any gas in this kind of
intriguing.
Yeah. I opened it. It smells of beer. My way of describing beer is always that it smells of beer. Of
beer. All right.
Let's see.
Mm-hmm. Rune's got his tiny beer glass out, which apparently is not that small.
It is not that small. It's a decent glass. Yeah. Let me say it's 33 centiliters.
Yeah, it's actually bigger than mine.
Yes.
Would you imagine that?
Anyway, I'm going to take a sip.
So how's the generous Bornholm beer?
It is generous.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the happy, but golden. Yeah.
Golden and generous.
Yeah, happy.
We'll see.
I could probably become happy. As you said, there's been a lot of sickness going around.
Yeah,
I'm always coughing. I'm getting more sick again now, and Reshka is coughing all the time. I've been sleeping on the floor next to her these past few nights because she's always waking up coughing. And I have to sit her up and give her something to drink and yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. There will be coughing today in this episode. I mean, Rune will try to get it out.
I will try to get it out. But yeah.
Also, last time there was a lot of coughing and bodily functional noise.
Yeah, I didn't know.
More than usual.
I'm looking forward to the summer.
Yeah,
when it'll just be hot.
Yeah.
And we won't
be
making any noise.
It's a good plan.
Any noise?
Okay.
Any noise?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Should we just get to Audio Way?
Yeah. You don't have anything else that you want to talk about?
I don't. Do you?
Not really.
No.
I mean, I want to talk about Disney movies because I'm giving Reshka Disney movies when she's sick.
Okay.
Because I found them on offer. I think I talked to you about it last time. And some of these old Disney classics have Icelandic voices here in Denmark.
Yeah.
So I'm buying them on Blu-ray. And she watches them in Icelandic.
Cool.
And I would like to talk about those. We've been watching Snow White and Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, yeah, we talked about Snow White. I needed to see that. I haven't seen that. So it's embarrassing, really.
Yeah, we should do a Disney show because, I mean, of course you can spend quite some time talking about Snow White, of course, but it would probably be better to just, like, lump a lot of Disney films together and talk about them like that and compare them a bit to each other because much of the magic of Snow White, for instance, is that it was made in, what, 38?
Mm.
And it still works. And it's beautifully done, you know?
That's quite amazing, really.
Yeah, that is really amazing. So, yeah, we should do that. But I don't want to go into it much. I watched Rock Dog on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
Seen the...
No,
pop up there.
But I have something to tell you about Netflix, though. Sorry,
okay.
I don't.
Yeah, okay.
Go on.
Well, Reshka and I just watched an Easter film because we have an Easter vacation here as well, and we watched Rock Dog. It was perfectly decent film. It reminded me of Coco. It's a dog that is denied playing guitar, then goes to the big city and plays guitar.
Good.
Yeah. It's definitely not as emotionally, it doesn't pull your emotional strings that much. And it's very, like, kind of flat.
All right.
It's all right. She enjoyed it. I was enjoying it really early in the morning. And yeah, Rock Dog.
Nice. I haven't seen it at all.
So. I would probably... prefer to watch it in English because we have J.K. Simmons in it.
It's a Netflix original, or?
I don't think so. No, so I thought it was.
Maybe it's not on the Icelandic one. And that happens all the time.
That could be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, at least it has a good cast in the U.S., but we watched it in Danish, and some of the jokes kind of fall flat when you translate.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
That's all I want to say.
Okay.
You were reminded of something on Netflix?
Highwayman.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah?
Is it The Highwayman or Highwayman?
The.
I knew exactly what I was getting, and I was just hoping to get exactly this.
Okay.
It's quite,
and it's been a long time since you've seen Kevin Costner.
That was the main attraction, really.
Yeah.
So how's the guy? How's Kevin doing?
Is he doing something?
We need to talk about Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do that one.
It's it is exactly what it's supposed to be, and it was I liked it.
Did you finish it?
Yeah, I liked it.
Wow.
It. Yeah.
Wow.
It's just
you're fast. Yeah.
Highwayman, it's a movie.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was series.
No, movie.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try it out. with Alien. It was Woody Harrelson also.
Yes,
wasn't
it's
it?
About the chase yeah, so, for. I mean, it's about the
yeah,
chase
Bonnie and
for
Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I want to watch it.
They were remarkably young. I think they were like 24, 25. Mm-hmm. These people, Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But you know, it's a very. Well, I think you know what I mean. It's exactly what you think it is, and fine, very very fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. A good 2 hours, like yeah. 2 hours well spent.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
Okay. But on Netflix we also have The OA.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The OA. Where did we leave our heroes?
We left by going into the eye of, what was her name? Rachel?
Yes.
Was it Rachel or something?
Yes.
We were zooming into her eye and
yeah.
then we saw
and
Buck.
We came.
Who seems like Michelle.
And at the start of episode 3, which is called Magic Mirror.
Yeah.
We're back into the, well, let's say the original dimension.
Yes.
Or timeline or whatever you want to call it. And Buck sees Rachel in his mirror.
You know, last time when we talked about this, and I was a little bit hesitant about this whole Buck-Michelle thing, I had completely forgotten Buck from the first season. Well, I had forgotten a lot about the first season, and now it all comes back to me.
Yes.
And I was thoroughly enjoying seeing all these characters again.
On that note, you remember I said something about this. Michelle is Buck, and we find out, you know, spoiler alert for episode 4, that the Michelle is Buck.
Yeah.
Buck is Michelle.
Or do we find out that it is? It's just like insinuated. Yeah.
Nina sees the picture Kareem has of Michelle and says Buck.
Yeah.
It's at least it's the same, you know, actor.
Yeah.
At least. But, exactly. You know, okay, I was pretty pleased with myself there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
But it is.
We're back into the original dimension, and we're back onto these characters. We have BBA and Steve, his girlfriend Angie, Buck, and Jesse, who is now a bit broken, and French. To just to go over like. The synopsis, they all get together and they decide to try this theory about Rachel in the mirror out after Buck's mom sells the mirror to, well, gives it to Goodwill. They start chasing it around and they end up in Nebraska via a church sanctuary somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you laughing here? It's a road movie.
I guess. But, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see where this takes us. How did you feel about going back to the original dimension and seeing all those characters?
As I said, I really enjoyed it.
It was fun.
I really enjoyed seeing all of them again. And you know... One of those things I loved about the first one was that it was ambiguous. You know, you didn't quite know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're back to the people who are definitely trying to believe, but they're conflicted because they don't have decidedly any proof. And And it's great to have that doubt in people and in the story, and it makes it much more intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I enjoyed that they were talking about the OA dying, or like Prairie dying, and people were saying that she was just dead. There was nothing happening, and
yeah,
and you know, it gave me that little hope that whatever is happening in Prairie's new dimension is actually just made up dream-like or something like that.
Okay, for me, I at this point, I'm finding the whole thing extremely funny, and I just thought that line about the psychic in Nebraska, that was so unbelievably ridiculous that I just thought, why are they doing this? I mean,
They're very go.
She was go charging lucky, them, you know, for the deluxe something package, yeah, wasn't she? That was good. It felt
that was a joke.
Yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, not totally not by joke, her.
And they were
not by her, the character, but it was a joke for us.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, it was intended as a joke
for us, but it was not for a joke us. By
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, okay. No. I know.
But
that's also one thing I liked here, that they were treating this supernatural stuff a little bit differently, because they were not just saying, okay, mediums, they know what they're doing. They were kind of making fun of the medium, but still,
not
they
the kids.
Were,
the kids.
The no, the movie.
Yeah.
The movie was making fun of it, and they were going in on it, and yeah, and then something entirely different happened than what the medium was actually trying to manifest.
I thought it was very funny. It was stretching the limits of what we could take, really. We all of a sudden we had a poltergeist, and
yeah, I know,
only BBA and there in the TV, yeah, and it was just so funny. But I want to say something about
BBA. Yeah.
Just the feeling of getting back to that suburb is it Indiana? I know they drive to Gary, Indiana, which is close to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure.
I just
where it is.
Immediately got this sad feeling, like this is a sad, sad place. That suburb, that street, it just felt really, really sad and desolate somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get that feeling as well? I mean, the folks were moving and.
Yeah,
I had that feeling all the way through season one.
Yeah. Alien had this feeling that it seemed like an Icelandic place.
Really?
All the way through. Yeah.
My God, it was just so sad. And it turns out that they went to this thrift shop in Gary, Indiana?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Turns out Gary is like this, I mean, it's a steel town. And it's like, half is its size of boom time. It's like 80,000 people. It used to be like 160 or something. And it's at its peak, and it's very high in crime. And so this, I thought, well, it kind of fits my feeling of things being kind of sad.
They're definitely going for the sad vibe.
Absolutely. I'm kind of praising the whole thing. It's I don't do that much, so listen when I try
good,
to.
Good.
And also that guy, French.
There's
something very, very sad about every one of the characters there. Every single one. They all seem lost and alone somehow, except when Prairie kind of
tied them all together, brought them together, and made them see something.
And this is of course by choice, but
yeah.
I just thought the destination,
the
location was relevant here.
Yeah.
So there's that, and I have another point about this episode. French goes and has a grinder date with the guy.
Yeah, the guy.
A guy.
Yeah, a guy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In it would have to be Gary, Indiana, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He didn't go far.
And I was very pleased to see who it was. It was an actor I know.
From Tremé?
From Scrubs. He was Keith on Scrubs. And that just made my day.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It was like an extra character. It wasn't one of the main characters, but yeah. I wanted to get that out there.
I liked the scene. It was a nice little discussion they had.
It was good.
Good to have those kind of scenes.
And he had an auntie or something in Nebraska, and so the guys went to Nebraska.
And it's the first guy you meet, and he says he has a medium aunt.
I mean, no. The only way to
500 miles away.
Yeah. The only way and to interpret the second part of that episode, when they went to go to Nebraska and meet the psychic and everything, is they have to be making a joke. Because if this is to be taken seriously, it's just too stupid.
Yeah, it's also pulling at straws.
It has to be tongue-in-cheek by the makers. I mean, it has to be.
It's so ridiculous. And also that all the people there are just saying, sure, let's go for a drive. I know distances are different in the States, but 500 miles?
That's a long drive.
There's a song about people wanting to walk 500 miles and 500 more.
Yeah, some Scottish people do that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, what did you think about how they figured out that they needed to get a hold of BBA?
The poltergeist.
No, it was before that.
Oh, the notes, the musical notes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's.
Don't you think it's quite amazing that Michelle or Buck? It's just humming this melody that she heard. And she's able to distinguish that it's a B, B, and an A. I mean, it's not a lot of people who have this complete tonal ear, you know? And knowing that it's a B, B, A, I mean, I'm okay to say, like, okay, it's one note, two notes, and a note down. Yeah, okay. But it could be anywhere. I mean, at least make a little bit of an effort, like, da, da, da. Okay. What could it be? It could be CCB. It could be.
I don't know.
Something else. EED. Something like that.
To be honest with you, I didn't even think about it. I didn't question it. I mean, this is where I'm at with this. I just.
Yeah.
Sure. That sounds plausible.
I mean, I thought it was a good idea. I would have just loved if they spent a little bit more time deciphering this code and being like, hey, actually, it was a BBA.
A lot of the stuff seems very, very coincidental plot-wise. We're not here. I mean, sure, we can make fun of it, but we'd be here all night, you know?
But anyway, okay. I really loved this episode. I liked it. I was engaged. I thought it was fun to revisit them. And again, as I said, I like that there's doubting here of what was actually happening.
I agree.
And they were still trying to find answers.
Absolutely. I was quite into it, even though it's a lot of ridiculous.
What about Shep? Did he? Did she continue?
She was. We'll get to her later, but. But she was okay. She wasn't like, you know, she did touch the floor, but she wasn't, you know, very vocal about loving it. But she was intrigued, okay. like I am. We're intrigued, you know. This is fun, first and foremost. So
it is, and like this episode also started to make me feel that they are really trying some Lynchian stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me so much of this, like the latest season of Twin Peaks, but just Well, on a completely different level.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get back to that.
Okay. Later. Let's move on to episode number four.
Yeah.
Syzygy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're back to we're back to the other dimension, and Hap is doing his thing. He's on a date with a traveler.
Yes, a fellow traveler,
played by the lovely Irene Jacob. She's awesome.
I also like her. I'm not sure if I like that story thread, but I like her.
Yeah, I guess we'll get back to how number five ends. But
yeah,
but this one we also have Karim back, and he is at the asylum and breaks out Nina.
Finally, we get the crossover that we've all been waiting for.
Did you see that scene when Karim mentioned a house and Nina just turned like a house?
I noticed. They seem to know something about this house that just subconsciously.
Okay, I mean the house is key. Obviously, we learn later, but
for some reason,
yeah. But this is a very, very interesting episode because we got a lot of strange stuff. After he breaks Nina out, they go to her place and she practices her Russian accent.
She practices it, but she pretends to be Nina beforehand, and it doesn't occur to her that she should try to speak a little bit with a Russian accent. And the guy on the other end was just like, yeah, sure, come by, it's fine.
We find that Nina has been recording her dreams, and we'll get back to that threat in the next one. But they find this
very explicit line there when they stopped listening to those tapes.
Yeah,
and that was kind of it was kind of odd to me that it had to take this sexual turn.
Yes,
it was a bit odd,
but it's to keep everybody interested.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
But they find out there's something about this syzygy thing. Closet full of cassettes. And they find out that syzygy is a reference to a bar downtown. And she calls and they go to a bar.
And they find out because it's the puzzle clue. The three wise men.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a dive bar. And therefore you say, the three wise men.
See, I knew I should just watch the whole three episodes the day before we recorded this. Because I watched it like 3 or 4 days ago. Damn. Okay.
I also had to rewatch the last episode, just the end of it. Because it was a while ago, and I had to understand that was what actually happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, they go down to the Three Whys, or Syzygy.
Yeah. And once there,
Nina is a celebrity.
Things get weird. She goes to what she thinks is some kind of a treatment she's used to having, and it turns out that she is hooked up to a telepathic octopus called who she calls Old Knight.
Yes,
and
his real name is Azrael or something.
Azrael, something. Azrael. Like,
yeah. But that would scare people, so just call him Old Knight.
Yeah,
for some reason. So, yeah.
She is...
And she's persuaded by Old Knight to reveal that she is the original angel.
That's true.
In front of all these people, in order to believe in herself more. And then he kills her.
What did you think about this whole octopus thing?
Oh, I thought, oh no. Oh no. What are they doing? That being said, I think they did it kind of well for what it was.
I agree.
I started accepting it after I saw the big octopus latching onto her. And, yeah. So I really don't think they should go there. No, it makes me question the whole legitimacy of this new dimension. Again, one of the reasons why I'm thinking maybe it isn't really a new dimension. Maybe it's something that takes place in a completely different place, in someone's head or something. At least I hope it does. But yeah, I thought it was effectful. It was an effectful scene, and also when she's getting killed and accepts that whole thing, it's this weird, illusion of grandeur on her part, just accepting being killed and letting go and knowing, having blind faith that she will prevail. She will resurrect.
Old Knight tells her she has 37 seconds or something like that.
Yeah. And it takes a bit longer.
What did it?
I think so.
But the whole thing with the octopus, it is so, the thing is for me, it's so out there that you just start laughing. But once it's done, it's like, all right, okay.
That happened.
That happened. Yeah. We accept it happened. Yeah. And we move on. Yeah?
We do.
But anyway, Kareem saves her from the octopus who was choking her. Yeah. And I think it was 37 seconds, pretty much.
It was something like that. I mean, he was counting. He was keeping count. Uh-huh. But at least she wasn't resuscitated in time.
Yeah.
Like so I would say she did die.
Yeah.
She stopped and died, and then she was revived. And
Kareem.
Anyway, and I don't know what that means.
Yeah. They, okay. They flee. Kareem? They flee the scene and onto some kind of a tunnel.
And this is here where you get this very artistic shot of them walking up a staircase with light coming out from the right.
I think that's in the next episode, actually.
Is that the next episode? Yeah, I don't remember.
Just to finish this fourth one, this is Geoff. I mean, this is what happens. She goes to the nightclub and they Kareem saves her. Meanwhile, Hap is on a date with Elodie. Irene Jacob.
Traveler.
And they have dinner and she's laughing at his telling her about the movements. And she's like, yeah, really? Yeah. She's saying basically that's kind of primitive. There are other ways to do this, you know, to travel interdimensionally.
Completely other ways, much easier ways.
So this is what we learn in this episode.
Yeah.
And should we just move on to the fifth one?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's just continue.
turns out the Syzygy nightclub was, they knew that it was situated close to the house. The house that Nina
The house that, owns. That only has one
She owns the house, right? And
she does. Or Pierre Ruskin's with her.
I think at least her. I believe so. Anyway.
But
they reach the house and they go in. In that artistic shot you mentioned, they climb very narrow stairs to
the fireplace.
Yeah.
Exit.
Okay. Yeah.
It reminded me of some very old movie. It's like a 40s movie or something with this really flat shot from the side and just a staircase. Yeah. It was kind of out of place.
Yeah.
And that's why I noticed it.
I think this whole episode is kind of interesting. I'm not sure how much I understood of it or how much, you know, seeped in here, but it was very creepy.
Yeah?
I thought. and intriguing.
Yeah.
And that whole that staircase thing. And I remember that in the Dreamatorium, Pierre Ruskin's Dreamatorium, which what I call it, there were like three images they yeah. got from the data of spoken data.
Yeah,
it was staircase.
Mm-hmm.
It was rose-tinted window.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it? A mirror.
No, you see, I don't remember. I remember that window and the staircase.
Yeah. Might be some kind of a chandelier or something. Anyway, it doesn't matter really.
It probably does, though.
It's all in the house.
Yeah. It is the one house that actually has it.
Yeah.
And we knew that in the second episode.
The house.
It's the only house.
Yeah.
So now they're there, and they have to solve another extremely easy puzzle in order to initiate some sort of thing in the house. And they do.
And we get history on the house. It turns out there was the engineer and the...
Medium.
There was a married couple with a childless couple. They owned the house. The engineer designed the house for his wife, and they made it to be a puzzle. The whole house was a puzzle.
It's a big escape room.
Yeah. And the medium knew... did I hear something that there was built on a Indian burial ground?
Something like that. Yeah. It was a sacred area.
A lot of horror tropes here.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was just an engineering feat here with the puzzles and...
Mm-hmm. Thought it was kind of cool when they went up the staircase on each side and just... there was nothing. It was just... they couldn't get anywhere. In the beginning, before they decided it's a puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when it was a puzzle, they decided to run up each separate stairs.
Obviously, yes.
Which...
which people in really horror films do, of course.
Yeah, that's true. But oh my God, it fucked me. I was thinking, this is really stupid. Why do they do this? They've just solved a puzzle. Of course they stick together.
Yes.
But no. Yeah.
Okay. So
meanwhile,
yeah.
Homer is starting to have doubts.
Homer,
and
yes.
He's actually trying to figure out maybe there is something to these stories that these other people are telling. And he's digging into Rachel's disappearance and figures out that she actually never was transferred to another hospital.
Well, the hospital didn't receive her at the very least.
Exactly. And also he goes out on a date and is not very successful.
No.
So he's also a little bit like...
kind of... I don't know what that was about. They were probably showing his status in this world. Yeah. He was kind of out of place.
Mm.
I think that's the message. He's out of place. He didn't...
bit.
Yeah. There's something...
But it didn't really give much more than that. Just maybe a little bit of anger towards the world.
Yeah.
He's digging into it. And that I'm interested in. Again... it's someone, a character who doesn't know what's happening and is trying to make sense of it. That for some reason, that intrigues me much more than any of these other characters.
That's probably going to happen in episode 6 or 7 here, that he comes around and that's going to be the big occurrence. And the rest of the season, they're going to be trying to reunite somehow.
Yeah.
You know.
And travel back.
O.A. and Homer. Well, in this dimension or whatever other dimension. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Remember that? When was that? There was a scene like a middle age, sometime in the Middle Ages when Homer was...
That was... It started. This season started like that. Or like episode.
Is it the fifth one or the fourth one?
Fifth one, I think.
Yeah.
And I...
very, very strange. He knocks on the door.
It was as if he was sleeping because he wakes up.
Well, he wakes up in his
and dimension, has remembered this. So, so maybe he has a figment of a time past or like a different dimension where he was searching for the OA.
Obviously, maybe. He's a dormant traveler, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I took from that. Must be. Right?
Must be.
Yeah.
Must be. I mean, obviously.
How deep should we go into this whole puzzle thing? I mean, they solve the puzzle, the initial puzzle.
Then, yeah.
They get separated. Kareem goes into a room. Apparently, he has no exit. Meanwhile, Prairie goes and jumps out a window, doesn't she? And
yeah.
She goes into some kind of a
falls into
root system of a tree. Tree root system. And how do we...
And it's connected.
It's all connected. It seemed to be the natural world. That's how I thought. Like the natural world. She is special. And the natural world was warning her to...
But this is connected even further because it knows that she's the OA, and this seems to be a dimension that has called on her for quite some time.
All right.
In order for her to get to this very point. It could be the core of all these dimensions, maybe. Or not.
Maybe there's no core. Maybe the house is just a meeting point. Exit and entry place.
Could be. Yeah. But it seems that the OA has been called to this place and drawn to it for some reason.
Yeah.
And this place knows that she's the OA. She's not Nina, but they need her to use Nina in order to get the answers she needs. Whatever they might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I didn't really get, didn't take anything else away from that. We go back to Kareem, who
gets out,
who finds this old woman from the astral plane.
It was the girl who showed him originally the girl who showed him the puzzle. Originally, it was the girl.
Wasn't it Michelle?
No. It was the girl who originally showed him the puzzle on the phone, which he was so impressed by. The visual.
Was it?
Yeah.
The one sitting in there?
Yeah.
But she was so old. She was much more like the one that the OA met at the astral plane.
Didn't he take her out of the house and then she was back young?
Or she was, but I still think that was Michelle. So maybe Michelle was the astral plane person after she went in there. And therefore it was, again, connected to that transitional world.
Okay.
I think so. I don't think it was the other one.
It's Fola.
Is it?
It's Fola. I'm looking at the synopsis on Wikipedia.
Yeah, okay.
so she's the girl who was involved in the puzzle in the beginning, I believe.
But still, didn't she look like the one that OA met up there?
I'm not sure that. I'm not sure that's season one.
I don't remember which. Yeah. It's in season one, but yeah.
Could be. I don't know. I'm inclined to think it's not.
Yeah.
Could be though.
I want more connections here.
But after the show we can watch the rest though. Remember that?
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
So I noticed people are listening to that OA episode last time. There was a good number there.
Yeah. Let's see.
Must be the Osu one. That must be the Osu thing.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. Or or not. Okay. But let's see if they actually get something extra out of us discussing the OA, because I don't really think else comes out of this.
We are not experts at the OA, let me tell you that.
No, and ideas and theories about universe.
That's not us.
They were trying. That was one of the things that I kind of liked, but also I was a little bit annoyed with that the one thing that was so controversial in the first season, that Prairie actually had made all of it up from a box of like an Amazon box she had underneath her bed.
Oh, yeah.
And they completely disregarded that one in this episode, like the third episode. They were just saying, yeah, but they got this long before, so no, yeah. It wasn't that. Mm-hmm. Instead of like going a little bit further with this whole theory that she might have made the whole thing up, then they just said, nope. It wasn't like that. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. Before we finish up with the OA, there's something, the ending of episode 5.
Yeah, the traveler.
The traveler and how she leaves. And that mechanical stuff. What did you make of that?
I thought it was so stupid. and especially because she had these things with her. Like 5 cubes that magically, or well, mechanically turns into robots that do the movements for her.
And she didn't take them with her.
Exactly. They're left behind. So
it's all a bit odd.
In whatever universe she's coming to, she needs to create these somehow. These very alien-looking devices. And she also hinted at a much easier way of doing the traveling.
Exactly. That's what gets me. I don't
I would say this is much more complicated.
Yeah, me too. I would actually say that too.
Yeah. but apparently not. This is And maybe we figure out that she actually for some reason wakes up in the other dimension with 5 cubes with her. Maybe
in her back pocket. Maybe.
Maybe. Fairly big for her back pocket, though. But
yeah. But whatever.
But maybe Hap is now in danger because she had called the police beforehand.
This is a good point. Nah, he's going to get out.
He's going to get out.
But,
of course.
Anyway, it's going to be intriguing to finish this up next time.
I've been very excited to see the rest of these episodes, if they make any sense or if it's just like a lot of...
It doesn't matter at this point. It doesn't make any sense at all to me.
You know, I was talking about Lynch and Twin Peaks before, and we did the whole thing about Twin Peaks, and that was kind of a long episode.
Yeah.
And also hard to figure out what actually happened here. But when I watch something from Lynch, I always have this feeling that it doesn't quite make sense, but there's something about it and it's connected. But not very tightly. This one, I feel like it's very thought out. Like, they have really thought out all the connections, all the different things they need to show.
Yeah.
And then they show it and make it. And it seems like that's why it turns into this pretentious thing. Because I don't want this dimensional transference being explained to me. I don't want them to explain how it actually works. I want to make up my own mind. And this one just seems like it's explaining and explaining and explaining all the time.
Yeah. It's a mystery. Yeah. It's basically a mystery.
That's just trying that they're trying to figure out. Where,
which is fine.
In Twin Peaks, you that's they're trying to figure it out as well, but it's more like the feeling of being in the mystery rather than finding the solution to the mystery.
Exactly, which is why you should never, ever compare the two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, are you ready to get lost?
Yeah. So, that's it for the OA. And next up is the 1997 Danish film called Let's Get Lost.
De er bedre til at tilfredsstille kvinder, fordi de er nødt til at gøre et eller andet for at kunne holde bunden. Altså, jeg kan holde ud, at jeg har lært ham at stikke fisse. Jeg har lært ham og trænet ham. Og nu er der en eller anden smatso, der skal have godt af det. Er det ikke meget uretfærdigt?
Jo. Nu er han simpelthen en topslikker.
Ja.
That was a clip from Let's Get Lost, a 1997 film by Danish director Jonas Elmer. It was apparently a cult... It has a cult status in Denmark, hasn't it, Rune?
A little bit. I was... I actually found it because I was looking at movies from the 90s that people thought were some of the best. Yeah. And it originated from us talking about Den Eneste Ene, and Alien really wanted us to watch Italiensk for Beginner, but I think you've watched it. And then I thought, why not try and find one of these lists of good movies from the 90s and then see if there's something that we didn't know of. Mm. And this one was one of them. And I was surprised to see that this was the first Sisse Babette Knudsen film.
Yeah.
Thought it would fit perfectly into our discussion instead of reiterating what we were talking about.
About Den Eneste Ene.
Den Eneste Ene.
In short, it's about, she plays the main role. And it's this kind of a snapshot picture of life in Copenhagen in the 90s about this woman who is in the process of, being dumped, really, and a few of her friends, and just a snapshot, I think, is a good word to use about what's going on here. And it's the interesting thing it kind of shows that it's shot on a very tight budget. These are not famous actors at the time. No. It's black and white, and it is improvisational.
Yeah.
So, first question to you, Rune. What did you think about... I mean, we have talked about the kind of black and white you can have. This seemed very, I don't know, kind of a Nirvana music video 90s. Do you agree? It's strange, black and white.
I don't know. It more reminded me of Clerks. This kind of black and white.
Okay. I haven't seen that for such a long time.
No. But that's also this like snapshot. You don't really remember the whole thing, but you remember
the 90s,
the sequences.
Yeah.
Very 90s. And a very easy way of making low-budget films because you don't have to think about color grading. And one of the most difficult things to do while shooting is to match color between one scene and another scene.
When I say music video, it's kind of that black and white cutaway thing. You have a music videos which are in color. Then you have like a cutaway thing where they get something different and it's in black and white. I don't know. I have this picture of something like that. It reminds me of something like that. Very 90s, though.
It is very 90s. Yeah.
Like you said, she's Barbara Knudsen's first film. I thought she was fantastic here.
I think she is great. She is very much Sisse Babette Knudsen.
Yeah.
But I was sitting here watching it and thinking this could very much be the time leading up to Nienz de Ene. Like
she,
her
she doesn't there. Play the same role there, I think.
No, she does. She doesn't. And it is different, of course. But, you know, it's... She's just such a likable actress. You know, it goes from very like strong performances, whether she's angry or frustrated or like having a good time with those lads there.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems so genuine. Like everything she does seems genuine. And I don't know, she just has this way of about her that makes me want to grab a beer with her and sit down and talk to her.
Exactly. You She's know? Like every man, but in a kind of a fascinating way. And this is not an easy role to play, I would think, because she is in the midst of a breakup, which, well, she hasn't been broken up with, but the signs are there. And she knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And she... Yeah. She's extremely vulnerable, but somehow at the same time, she's very cool, strong, and mm-hmm. she gets all those things across very easily.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
Very strong performance, I thought.
I do agree with you, and I'm. It's no wonder that she were picked up after this. You know, in more movies.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
She has it all. I mean, she has a way about her. She has this whole smile thing going on as well. Mm-hmm, she's pretty mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm, she was destined to great things,
I thought.
But she's
also a bit atypical still. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, she's not completely traditionally pretty. She's, like, different.
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
At least.
Sure.
Yeah.
And she talks about in the film about how all men like their blonde stick figures yeah. with big boobs, yeah. which she's not. And,
yeah. and which she also does in the Nienz de Ene.
Yeah. A bit. That stereotype about all men liking the same thing, that is just complete rubbish.
It is.
Yeah. Complete
rubbish. It is. Let's put that to the grave right now.
Yeah. Just stop it.
Yeah. However,
yeah.
both of us have kind of blonde girlfriends and wives.
Well, she's not really that blonde, but my wife.
No.
No. Not at all, really. Well, actually. You are remembering something.
Yeah, I'm remembering something else. No, no, I'm like, Elin was very blonde
yes.
when I met her.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
We've put that to rest anyway.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing about this film, that it just brought the 90s back to me.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff about watching football in the TV.
Yeah.
With the blokes.
Yeah, which
and kind of throwing the brain out the window and then just watching the TV.
Yes.
I thought it was fine. It didn't really give me anything, but I can imagine that a lot of people will find that thing relatable.
I can tell you about that.
Yeah.
Well, what we see is the boys are all very much into Mikael Laudrup, which is a Danish icon, football icon, mm-hmm. best player ever in Denmark. In 97, he was kind of finishing his career, and they're all kind of yeah. obsessed with him. He's playing for the Danish national team. Actually, the final scene is at Parken,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And... there's this, they're very much, the boys are very much They play up to the stereotype of the football fan and everything. Mm-hmm. But there's something else going on here as well. And it's very much overlooked. And that is the idea of the sportsman being an artist.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That
is not a very, it's not a very, very common look at it, I think. But, I mean, if you look at a free kick from David Beckham, or you look at something, you know, from everything LeBron James does on a basketball court, or, you know, whatever, figure skating, whatever. There's so much beauty in sport. And when you have that sportsman as an artist, and I think Michael Laudrup falls into this category. I mean, this is a unique guy. He's like one of the very, very, very few people who have played for Barcelona and Real Madrid. Won the Spanish title with both. Yeah. And he was a real, I mean, I would call him an artist.
Okay.
I know you don't see it like that.
No, I can totally see the figure skating as an artist.
But still, I mean, a perfect free kick from I don't know, Cristiano Ronaldo or whomever.
Mm-hmm.
And sport is not just about this. What do you call it? Like this group mentality, kind of like religious kind of thing, where you follow teams or whatever. I mean, there's beauty in that as well. It gets ugly as well.
Community and
there's all that. But the sportsman and as an artist, that's a largely overlooked thing. Well, the boys in this film are played very stereotypically as. You know, there are huge stereotypes, I guess, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yet they're all very different.
They are.
None of them have jobs, like real jobs, but they're getting by in different ways.
Yeah.
Let's say.
True. We have Bjarne Henriksen, who was in one of my favorite films, Festen, as the cook.
As the chef. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. He also got really big after these films.
he's a big actor today, isn't he?
Yeah. And also, I don't know if I see him that often anymore, but at this time he started rising.
Yeah.
But also talking about Festen a little bit, or the celebration, this movie was also a precursor for the whole dogma movement. The dogma manifesto had not been put down yet, but this or written down yet, but this one was kind of dogma out of necessity rather than by manifest. So it was recorded in 12 days and just like mainly handheld stuff, it seems. And
I mean,
black and white.
Actually, the rules of dogma were first put down in 1995.
Yeah. But the first one, like the first one that came out, was actually Festen.
Yes.
And Idiononim, which was later.
Uh-huh.
So it didn't. It is in many ways a dogma film, because it's just shot from the hip and it's improvisational and all that. But then you have the music that is being put on top afterwards.
Yeah.
For instance, when they're playing football in Parken, or like right outside Parken, that is a very strange scene. Like this weird like camaraderie feeling, and they don't necessarily feel like they fit together all that much, all these characters.
Also, choice of song.
And the song was very weird.
It was a big band jazz Frank Sinatra kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which they were doing a bit in the 90s. There were a few.
Were they?
Yeah, there was a...
Maybe it fitted back then. This time, I could have done without it. I could have... done with just like one scene where they maybe had one line or something, and you sense the camaraderie, and then they start playing, and then you cut away from it. Not a whole music video, big band thing.
Yeah, it's weird. I made a note. I didn't know what to make of it, but
I thought we might realize a little bit later why this happened, because mm-hmm. it's fairly early in the film.
Yeah.
But nothing like that happens
nothing
later.
Connected to it or anything. It's just a camaraderie scene and with weird music, and then it's just I don't know. Let's pick this song kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's
not a lot of thought gone into that at all.
And to have a scene like that where you have a whole song over it on top of it, it was just is a weird choice in this kind of a film.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think so.
Yeah.
Because there were other scenes with very nice use of diegetic music that I took notice of. The whole thing seemed very tight, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
In its style, but then this thing just like pointed in a completely different direction.
Yeah. Really stood out.
Yeah, but okay, there are some really good scenes, and apparently this movie is known for a few quotes. For instance, with the Sisse Babette and Mette Horn, also another actress who became a bit famous after this, mm-hmm. Are sitting at a cafe and talking about tongue skills.
Yes.
Topsliga.
It's a Topsliga now.
Topsliga, yeah. And I think that quote is yeah, one of the reasons this movie is still being quoted.
Yeah.
You know. and it's a good scene. And, you know, when I saw the guy who is dumping Sisse Babette, things were going through my mind. Like, this is an odd combination of people, Sisse Babette and this guy. And then she explained the whole situation.
Yeah.
At the cafe, and I gave the movie more credit for that. I was like, "Yeah, okay, I see what you're doing here."
This is a well known thing. I mean, he has been trained.
Yeah, he has been.
He's been trained in every way. He's this loser guy who looks weird, and she kind of took him under her wing and just this is how we do things here.
Him. Yeah,
and then he flies the nest.
Flies the coop.
Yeah.
And tries it out for himself. And apparently.
There's so many weird, strange, everyday things going on here, like the mushrooms and... And the CD case without the CD?
Yeah.
That was totally improvisational when you think about it. It has to be. It was just... Wow, let's do something with this. Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
But it seems so genuine.
It seemed totally genuine.
And the scene with the great book of Grants.
Yeah. You know,
that was a very good scene. Nothing much comes of it, you know, but it was just great.
I wanted to ask you, I made a note of the, why, what is that thing? The great book of Grants is... Is Denmark this kind of a society where you can get grants for everything?
Yeah, well, I've been there. I've been looking through this exact book.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Because, you know, you can actually get grants for just about anything. And you just need to apply for them. And you have this big book where there's all sorts of grants, and you need to live up to certain requirements that, like, they also talk about in the film. And then you can apply for them, and maybe you get them. And it could be, like, 3,000 kroners or 1,000 kroners for maybe wanting to go abroad to study. And then you're you happen to be studying some technical in a technical field, and then you apply for the grant because you live up to the requirements, and you can get a boost.
Would you say that Denmark is like a fairly socialist society?
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, we here in Iceland, we know that, and I think many people in Denmark have this view of Icelandic people that they're like layabouts that come to Denmark and just hang out there because it's easy, and you mm-hmm. get by on, you know, the state's help. The state helps out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say this is accurate?
It could be.
And these people like kind of felt a little bit like that to me, these guys at the very least.
Yeah.
So I thought
they did.
Would you say this is a very true slice of life in Denmark in that way?
You know, I do think so. Like I when I looked at that Legate book, the grant book, I was on like student benefits, which is the pay you get for studying. And
we have nothing of like that here. You realize that there's nothing.
Yes,
like
I
that
I do. I do realize. Yeah.
You pay every also penny back here. You get.
Yeah, you don't here.
Yeah.
And some types of SU, like student benefits, you don't even have to pay back.
Sure.
If it's not a like a higher education.
Yeah.
Then you don't.
Okay.
Use any of it anyway. Yeah, so when I looked at that book, I was on that and then thinking, I mean, maybe if you need to do a project, like for instance, movies and stuff like that can mm-hmm. be funded by grant money. So if you're an artist, you really need to look into grants and get yourself sponsored in a way by living up to certain grants.
It's one way of doing things, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But this guy just realized and was just flipping through the book and trying to figure out what worked.
Kind of being a layabout Icelandic person.
Yeah, kind of. Except he already got benefits.
Yeah.
Here. So he gets benefits and then he wants a little bit more, you know. And also, like, none of these people seem to really struggle, but they never have any money, but they don't really struggle.
Seem so, but they're not. They're broke, of course, but
they are always broke.
It doesn't. Yeah. At the same time, it doesn't seem they have any. There's nothing telling them to go, get up off
get
your ass and get
no.
a job and make something of yourself.
No,
and this is the other side. The flip yeah. side of the whole system.
I guess so.
Yeah,
you could go there.
Yeah, we could. I'm guessing we could go deep into this and get nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I guess you need to find a balance between the two. Mm.
I think it's more of a slice of life, and of course these are kind of freeloader types.
Yeah.
But they're also for some reason drawn into this criminal dark side, but then the criminal dark side is really not that dark.
Well, it's,
like this.
Yeah, it's yeah.
I really liked the scene when he was when Bjarne Henriksen was helping out Jesper Esholt, I think his name is, mm-hmm. like this little guy
swindling that widow.
It. Yeah, I mean that was really disgusting.
Really horrible.
Very horrible to do that stuff. But and it takes you a little while before you realize what's going on here. But
sure.
That is it was a good scene. It was a good take on it, you know?
Good, like, clever scene. I absolutely agree. Like this film, I didn't expect much. I was watching it very late alone. But mm-hmm. I was totally engaged all the way through, and
yeah, me too.
I said something about the very 90s before, and just I don't know if you remember. I mean, you are like 10 years younger than I am, but mm-hmm. in 97 you were 13?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 23.
Yeah.
And
we just shared some pictures also from these times.
Good times.
Yes, good times. We looked cool back then.
The fashion was so horrible. Remember that suit he was wearing, the writer guy?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah. Did you see the pants?
Like it everything was just like XXL on him. And he was probably a large or something.
It was weird.
But it's so hard to figure out if he was just completely out of it or if he was actually stylish, you know, like fashionable.
He can't have been that stylish.
But it could be like that. So now when we look back at it, we think, okay, he's even more of a loser. But maybe then it would like connotate some other things.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, I thought, yeah, we're all losers here. Every one of them, such losers, every single one. But every one of them also kind of likable.
Yeah.
Kind of fun. And you didn't think very ill of them, even though they were I mean, we had this guy, the writer guy, looking at through binoculars at naked neighbor and then following her.
Exactly. But it all seemed so innocent.
It did seem innocent and it did seem true as well. And it did just seem human.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the main thing I take away from this. It was very real.
Yeah. It really is.
I thought it was a very good movie.
I didn't rate it very highly because I was like, yeah, it's a fine movie. It didn't give me anything. But looking back at it, all these vignettes that you actually remember were really good. And they were very well done. And well acted. You totally got in there and were part of the scene, you know, and you accepted these weird things that they were doing.
Yeah. I totally agree. The acting was impeccable, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, that scene when she had gotten into his apartment, like, when her ex-boyfriend's apartment, and there was nothing much in that scene because her ex-boyfriend was just always asking her, like, how did you get in here?
Sure.
And that was it. There was no real drama going on. It was just, it's weird that you're here.
Absolutely.
You know? And it's something that you would probably expect that would happen. It was like an anticlimactic movie because everything, it didn't have a climax. It was just real. And things just happened and ended, and it didn't make a difference.
Yeah, there's no resolution to anything, really.
No.
It's just a peek at their lives and
get on with it and find some happiness in soccer. Football.
Football.
Sorry.
And speaking of football, now, at this minute, the game is starting at the Camp Nou, Barcelona versus Manchester United.
Yeah, because we record this ahead of time.
Yes, I will be very happy tonight, if we fall out. If we fall out not tonight, but we'll see.
We'll see, and I hope we'll survive.
It's very unlikely, but the miracles happen.
Just before we stop, Let's Get Lost or Den Eneste Ene? Very different movies.
Very different. I wouldn't want to compare them, really. I like them both, but differently. Den Eneste Ene is a comedy, straight up comedy. romantic comedy. It's a genre film, really, but a very good one.
Yeah.
But this is different.
Yeah.
It's the improvisational thing I thought was very impressive, because that kind of makes the whole feeling you get from watching it, makes it real. And it doesn't feel improvisation. It just feels like you're watching people's lives.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
And yeah, I actually scored it lower than Deneen's De Ene, but I actually, or maybe similar actually, but I would think I would enjoy this film even more. Deneen's De Ene has just been with me for such a long time. Uh-huh. It's part of my past. I've known all the quotes, and when I rewatched it since last time, all of the quotes come back, and you're like, yeah, that was funny, but some of it doesn't land the same way anyway today. Where I can see this movie is probably something that is more long-lasting. It's more of a glimpse into the 90s rather than like Deneen's De Ene, which is, yeah, the rom-com comedy.
Yeah.
I
see that I rated them exactly the same. Yeah, 7 out of 10. So,
yeah.
Good movies, both of them.
Very good movies, and something you really should check out. Let's Get Lost.
Let's Get Lost. There's a movie with the same name from 1988 about Chet Baker, documentary. We should maybe watch that as well.
I was thinking about
it.
I also found it in my research here.
Yeah.
When that one was popping up all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, that was our show for this time. And
we have no idea what's going on next time, we're going to finish the OA.
We're going to finish the OA. And as you probably realized throughout this show, I felt a little bit off all the way through. Like, my brain is not working at the same capacity as usual. and I think the two kids has something to do with it.
It might be.
I think so. I promise I'll try to get back. Maybe not next time, but the time after that. Yeah, then I've gotten used to it.
Just stay in the bubble there for a while if you can.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good place to be.
It is, and it's so much fun. You know, just focusing on the human relation you have.
All like that visceral love
thing. Yeah. And not think about anything else.
Exactly.
At all.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So next time we don't know, but the OA will be finished. We will have our verdict. Our final verdict.
Yeah.
Will I be crying or will I not?
We might do this again. I mean, doing like a few episodes in a series each time.
It's also like easier to discuss them. Yeah, it's easier to discuss them like that.
Yeah.
Probably also more fun to follow along with.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, if you want to contact us, or if you have any other thoughts on the OA that we didn't discuss here, you can write us at contact@theconversationpodcast.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud. Just do a search for The Conversation Podcast, The Conversation of Nordic Film Podcast. And we have a website, theconversationpodcast.net.
Yeah. Check that out. So I think that's it for tonight. Until next time, take care.
Take care. And bye-bye now.
You always have to steal. Bye. Okay, let's finish up here. Oh my God, Rune. Oh my
what
God,
is it?
We didn't tell people. You have two kids now.
Didn't we tell
people? We didn't tell anyone.
It's just been going so fast.
Rune is a double father now.
A double dad.
Yeah, he had a little baby boy, healthy baby boy.
Yeah, and he's keeping us up. No, he's not really, but it's harder juggling two.
So that
small people.
That beginning of the episode when we were says, "Oh, something going on now, nothing to report really." That should have been the time to say, "Well, I had a baby."
It's because I have this parental leave brain right now.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything.
And it's because you told me right away. So it's not like news between us. That's the reason,
no.
Probably.
Yeah. I wouldn't keep it for two weeks from you. No, nothing to report here.
Jeez.
No, but it's true. And I was thinking the reporting thing. I was thinking about movies. I haven't had time to watch anything because two kids, you know. I've really, as I was talking about last episode, I've been mainly on Raskvat duty.
Yeah.
Taking care of her. Also because she got sick. Also, of course.
Of course.
So I've been keeping them separated a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And just taking care of her. But yeah, he's an adorable little guy.
It's going really well, isn't it?
Yeah. He's just lying there and eating and sleeping and looking sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like opening his eyes, but mm-hmm. not, I mean, he's just lying there. You forget how small they are.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon, like, I've always been told this by people who have several kids, that once you return from the hospital, your previous kid has grown so extremely
much.
And, oh my God, that was right. You know, as soon as, like, we went to the hospital. Now you get the story.
All
here,
right,
anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, let's make a break and talk a little bit about our personal lives. But we went to the hospital around 6 o'clock in the evening,
mm-hmm.
and we had a baby boy around 9 o'clock in the evening. So it went fastish, I guess.
Yeah.
The contractions started around 7 o'clock, like for real.
Mm.
So we were sent home in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. and took a taxi from the hospital, which is not too far away, and got back here and got to bed, and everything was fine. And in the morning, Raskva came in to us and was asking if she could see little brother. And then she was petting him and thought he looked nice, and Elin was hurting. And and then life went on, you know? Like, then that was the new status quo.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's exactly been like that ever since. It's a very different sensation having the second kid,
yeah.
Because you have a whole system that needs to continue to function,
mm-hmm.
and your other kid really doesn't care, you know. You just continue. So therefore, it's not been a lot of Elin and I looking at this little new guy and just being amazed that this is something we created.
Yeah.
You know, as we did the first time, mm-hmm. we still have that feeling. Of course, it's odd that you can create this little person, but you just don't have time for it, and you need to focus on other things as well. It'll be very different bringing this little guy up. It'll be the same, but it'll be different. He's not the center of attention, and Raskva is not anymore either, you know. So
yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah,
I'm really intrigued. I'm very excited about the future here, because so far everything just seems really great.
Yeah, it's like in a little bubble right now.
Yeah.
Just staying at home and just enjoying life.
Yeah, yeah. We did expect, though, to have a bit more time alone with the little kid, the mm-hmm. new one.
Yeah.
But there's an Easter break in the kindergarten.
Exactly.
Which means I'm making fun stuff with Raskva.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
No, but it's really great. I'm so happy about this whole thing. It's quite amazing. and I hope you look forward to it as well.
Oh, we are.
In a few months.
Obviously, we're very happy for you guys as well.
Yeah. I'm looking so much forward to compare notes and talk about these things. We're in such a fortunate situation where we can actually do that.
Yeah.
Still, also with the second one.
So, Rune, father of two, that doesn't sound weird at all?
Actually not. No.
No? Good.
Father of three, though.
That's weird. Mm. Mm.
Also, remember not to make a joke about having another kid while giving birth. That's, yeah.
Okay, I'll remember that one.
I wasn't killed. I wasn't killed or anything, but it was not the time.
Okay. All right. Tell you the truth, Shepna has been on my case about number three for a long time. Before the first one, she's been working on number three with me. I've been saying, no, two was fine. Two was good. Two was great.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sticking to my guns right now.
Right now, I'm also feeling that way.
Yeah.
Two seems like the good number here.
Yeah, it's a very good number.
Then again, I was the third myself. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you need to draw the line at some point.
True.
I guess.
Okay.
Okay, that was that was what I should have reported.
Yeah. That should have been in the beginning.
But now we just left you hanging a little bit. Yeah, so
there he is.
There he is.
Aye aye.
Apparently he's been crying a bit.
Really?
Yeah, because
he looks a lot like Raskva.
Yeah. Does. He's very little.
He's very little, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing thing.